I'd like to go ahead and call the COGPA meeting to order. And if we can call roll.
Senator Aquino. Representative Davidsmeyer.
Here.
Senator DeWitt. Representative Harper. Representative Hernandez. Senator Kaler. Representative McLaughlin. Representative Moeller. Senator Sims. Representative Sosnowski. Senator Stoller. Senator Severson. Five present. Sorry, six. Six present.
Six present. We have a quorum. Not that it's needed. No votes are going to be taken today, but I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Clayton. We can go ahead and get rolling on the financials.
Right. Well, good morning, co-chairs and members of the commission. It's good to be presenting to you this morning to provide an update to our COGFA FY24 revenue estimate and also the initial look at our FY25 economic forecast and revenue estimate. I am joined at the table by our revenue manager, Eric Noggle, and our chief economist, Ben Varner. After my opening comments, we will go through the PowerPoint that has been distributed to you all. First, Ben will go through the economic forecasting slides, and then Eric will present the actual revenue slides for FY24 and 25. For the last several years, as part of our presentation, we have mentioned that the national economic forecasting firms have projected a fairly good chance of a recession looming on the horizon. During our last annual revenue meeting, we mentioned that many of the economic firms were still forecasting such a chance of a recession, but we mentioned that the data that we saw coming in month to month gave us greater confidence that the economy would continue to chug along, and that is what we have continued to see. Several of the data points that we watch do show trends of some slowing, including wages earned and sales taxes collected in Illinois. While we have continued to see some growth, there are warning signs that the economy is leveling off, which can be expected as a result of the monetary tightening we have seen from the Federal Reserve as an attempt to rein in inflation. While some of the economic indicators have slowed, revenues have continued to meet expectations compared to the enacted budget. And thanks to some one-time revenue receipts, they are forecast to surpass the enacted budget estimates. Our presentation today will break some of these one-time revenue receipts out from the base receipts so that the performance of the base receipts can be more clearly seen. Our presentation today will start with a look at several economic variables which provide data to gauge strength of the economy over the last few years. This data is then used as a starting place as we compare various economic forecasting models to project future economic activity. And then finally, these projections are used as we forecast revenue receipt collections for each of the revenue streams that we track as an agency. So at this time, I will turn it over to Ben Varner, the COGFA chief economist, and he will take us through the first half of the presentation, focusing on the economic variables and the economic forecast.
And really quick, before you start, Ben, I want to add Sosnowski to the role.
Thank you. As Clayton said, my name is Ben Varner. I'm the chief economist with the commission. I'll be taking you through some of the economic indicators and what we're seeing with them. The first slide is real gross domestic product, or GDP. This is one of the broadest measures of the economy. It's an inflation-adjusted value of goods and services produced in the U.S. It's made up of basically about 70% personal consumption or consumer demand, investment both in housing and business investment, including inventories, make up about 18%, and then government spending and investment make up about 17%, and then net exports takes out a little off the table. As you can see on the chart here, we saw huge declines related with the outbreak of the pandemic, and then a good year and a half of strong growth. In the beginning of 2022, we saw two quarters of negative growth, which some people were considering a recession, but most economists don't believe so, seeing what employment did during that time. We saw a year of about a little over 2% growth leading into the midpoint of 2023 when we saw a surge of economic activity. In the third quarter of 2023, we saw growth of 4.9%. This was based on strong consumer demand and inventory building by businesses. This was followed up in the fourth quarter with another strong 3.2%. This was driven by consumer spending, especially on services. Excuse me. Overall, consumer spending has held up. Government spending helped in 2023, while housing still is somewhat weak, though could provide some support with improvement in affordability, especially if we start seeing some interest rate reductions in the future. Looking at the economic forecasts in February, they have a mean estimate for real GDP growth of 2.1% for 2024, which would be in line with long-term trends, and 1.7% for 2025, a little slowing of the economy. The next slide shows the consumer price index. The consumer price index, the CPI, is a measure of the average change over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a market basket of consumer goods and services, a measure of inflation. As many of you know, or all of you know, we've seen much higher prices over the last few years. This was due to high levels of demand coming out of the pandemic, healthy household balance sheets that were supported by government payments, led to high demand, and at the same time we had supply chain issues related to the pandemic and the outbreak of war in Ukraine. CPI reached a high of 9.1% in June of 2022. Core CPI, which excludes food and energy, some of the more volatile items in the CPI, grew to 6.6% in September of 2022. Since then, we've seen declines as inflation has come more under control. Since then, CPI has fallen to 3.2%. We actually got new data this morning, so the second to last bullet point there is a month old. But this morning, we saw 3.2% growth. We've had a small spike the last 2 months, while core CPI has remained a little higher at 3.8% in February. If you look at the second chart, you see the inflation rate for Chicago. It's followed a pretty similar pattern. We were a little bit below throughout most of 2023, but in the last couple months have risen up to where the U.S. is in total.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Can you add Hernandez to the roll?
Expectations are for inflation to continue to slowly moderate, though, as we've seen in the last couple months, you can have some surges in inflation. But if you look at what the markets expect, or forecasters are expecting, we continued slow decline. Currently, it's being driven by shelter costs, and this should continue to go down, but we also saw energy costs go up this month. The next page shows interest rates. In order to fight inflation, as Clayton mentioned, the Federal Reserve went through a series of interest rate hikes. They did this to fight inflation, to cool off a potentially overheating economy, and better align a really tight labor market. They do this by raising interest rates, which increases the cost of borrowing, which lowers demand, which can lead to lower employment. We saw a significant increase since March of 2022 in short-term interest rates. We saw 11 increases, taking the target range from 0 up to 5.25% is where it is currently. Now, the hope for all this was the soft landing, which is a decrease in inflation with minimal impact on economic activity, especially jobs. It appears to be happening at this point. We're not quite all the way there. Some people believe we are, but we're still sort of landing the plane. In December, the Federal Reserve indicated through their forecasts that they foresee interest rate cuts in 2024. The market was hoping these would come as early as March, but based on statements by Fed members since then and the actual minutes when they came out from the December meeting, make it more likely it's going to be later. As of yesterday, market pricing for a 25-point cut in the interest rate saw a 22% chance in May and a 71% chance in June. So right now the market's seeing more like a June, maybe even July. We'll see what happens both with employment and inflation numbers. The next page is the manufacturing PMI, the purchasing manager's index for the manufacturing sector. This is an index that measures the health of the manufacturing sector. Basically, above 50 indicates expansion, below equals contraction. Once again, we saw big declines as the pandemic broke out, but then large surges in expansionary months. But beginning in November of 2022, the index has been below 50, indicating a 16-month period of contraction in the manufacturing sector. In February, the PMI for the U.S. stood at 47.8. The red line on this graph shows the Chicago area. It's a little more volatile month to month, but it followed a similar pattern. In the manufacturing, continued softness in demand is an ongoing concern, though prior supply chain constraints appear to have eased with the lessening of COVID's effect. The next page shows the services PMI, the similar index for the much larger service sector. Basically, once again, we saw a big decline related to the outbreak of the pandemic, and then about a year and a half of really strong growth. An all-time high was registered in November of 2021, but then we slipped to the mid-50s throughout most of 2022. 2023, we saw slow growth. We were actually below where we were during the last expansion, so I would expect to continue this sort of slow growth trend. In February, the services PMI stood at 52.6. And looking at what's going on in the industries right now, some firms still having issues with labor supply and employee costs, though demand, once again, appears to be holding up. The next page is employment. This is the bright spot, or the really bright spot in the U.S. right now. We've seen really good growth in unemployment, or excuse me, in jobs. Depending on which survey you look at, the household survey, which is, of course, a survey of households, which includes the self-employed in the ag sector, or the establishment survey, which is a payroll survey. That takes actual payroll data. We've seen growth at the U.S. level in both of these. However, monthly increase in employment have steadily slowed since the beginning of 2022. Basically, coming out of the pandemic, we had really high levels of growth. Since then, we've been slowing, but we still have good growth. In the last 3 months, December through February, we've averaged more than 265,000 jobs per month. That's still really solid. If you look at the last expansion from 2010 to 2019, we averaged a little less than 200,000. So we're still growing, but it's just slower than it has been. Job growth in 2023 was driven by healthcare, government, and education, which has somewhat lagged other industries during the current expansion. The next slide shows Illinois employment, and we have not done quite as well as the nation as a whole. We've rebounded, but not as much as the country as a whole, as I said. Based on the establishment survey, the U.S. had recovered all the jobs lost due to the pandemic by June of 2022. Based on recent revisions, Illinois came close to this point in June of 2023, but has fallen some since then. Basically, last week we saw revisions in our benchmark, and basically we've seen some weakness in the household survey going back to the summer of 2022, I believe. Hold on 1 second. Yes, the summer of 2022, but we hadn't really seen it in the establishment survey. With these benchmark revisions we got last week, now we actually see some declines in the fall of 2023. So we're seeing some weakness in Illinois. Similar to the country as a whole, in 2023 we saw large increases in education, health, and government employment, but these were more than countered by declines in other sectors, especially the business and professional services. The professional and business services sector. The next page shows unemployment insurance claims. So far, we're still seeing a pretty tight labor market. We're not seeing a big increase in initial claims or continued claims. Beginning at the end of 2022 and beginning of 2023, we were at some of the lowest levels ever for continuing claims. We saw a small increase in initial claims, but since then they've come back down, and continued claims continue to be where we were in 2019. So basically, we're still a pretty tight labor market, but not as tight as it was when we were coming out of the pandemic. This is also supported by other statistics such as quits, which are also back to where it was just prior to the pandemic, and job postings are telling the same story. Prime age participation rates remain were historically high, though overall participation rates are down a little due to demographic changes. Looking at the unemployment rate, once again, employment's been doing very well. We are currently, since the beginning of 2022, the employment rate for the U.S. has been below 4%, which is the longest stretch since the late 1960s. So unemployment rates in the U.S. are doing very well. However, Illinois has continually lagged the country as a whole. We're usually about a half point to a full point higher. As of February, the U.S. unemployment rate was 3.9%. The Illinois rate was at 4.7% in January, which was up from the 4.2% rate seen over the spring of 2023. So we have seen a little increase in unemployment over the last year.
I'm going to ask you to pause real quick. Can we add Mueller to the roll?
Thank you.
The next slide shows wage growth. As you can see here, we've had extreme growth in wages over the last couple years, especially at the lower end, your lower wage earners. It peaked about January of 22, and since has been steadily going down, and hopefully this is probably actually a good thing. Usually you want rising, but with inflation risk, you'd like to actually see wages slow down a little, and you need that to get inflation under control, which it does appear we are starting to see a decline there. Looking at the economic forecasts, one of the main ones we look at is the consensus forecast. This is a group of between 25 and 30 economic forecasters that get aggregated each month. This includes banks, economic firms, business association, and academic institutions. For real gross domestic product, as I mentioned previously, they're forecasting growth of 2.1% in 2024 and 1.7% in 2025. Personal income, they have slowing to 2.2% in 2024 and 2.3% in 2025. As mentioned previously, we're expecting a slowdown in government spending. It was estimated at 4% in 2023. We're going to slow to 2.1% in 2024 and 0.9%. A lot of this has been spending at the state and local level the last year or so. Consumer prices are expected to fall to 2.6% in 2024 and then to 2.2% in 2025. So expectations are for inflation to continue to decline or slow down, but it is going to take a while. Unemployment rate, they're at 4% for 2024 and 4.1% in 2025. Those are really low rates. And if that continues to happen, the economy is just going to keep going along. One forecast that we look at in particular is the S&P Global. We pay them to get their information directly, and in that we get a multiple scenario forecast. The baseline shows the most likely scenario with a 55% chance of occurrence. The baseline forecast anticipates continued momentum in 2024 with firm but slowing growth. They don't see any issues with the labor market, if anything was to happen, expected to the end of 2024. Real GDP is forecast to slow from 3.1% in 2023 to 1.7% in 2024 and 1.6% in 2025. I must mention these are actually end-of-year numbers, so they're a little different than the ones I've mentioned previously. A more pessimistic scenario with a 30% probability has a shallow recession hitting as tightening lending standards curtail credit expansion and restrain spending. So basically they think we might 30% upward or possibility of a short two-quarter recession. And basically they would see no growth in 2024 and then a return to slow growth of 1.5% in 2025. Under this scenario, they have the U.S. unemployment rate going up to 6%. Finally, they have a 50% likely optimistic scenario, which is basically stronger consumer demand and more banking support, which real GDP growing at 2.5%. in 24 and 2% in 2025. Under this scenario, the unemployment rate stays a little below 4%. So right now we're basically seeing what we've seen the last couple of years. It's a slowing economy, but we're still expanding. We don't see anything that's crazy right now. We do see a little weakness in Illinois employment, but as Eric will show you, I think as it relates to revenues, we'll continue going forward.
All right, I will continue on with the revenue picture for the state of Illinois.
We'll first look at fiscal year 24, and we're going to start with slide 19. This shows how the fiscal year 24 enacted budget compares to that of fiscal year 23 actuals. If you recall, there was a lot of one-time revenues that came in at the end of fiscal year 23. That's why the total came down to $53.1 billion. The enacted budget has a number of $50.6 billion, which would be a $2.5 billion decrease as compared to 23. And again, much of that reason for that decrease is because of these one-time revenues that were not expected to repeat in 24. One of the other reasons that we had such a drop in 24 and did not see just regular growth is because the income tax refund transfer was $1.5 billion in fiscal year 23. That was expected to drop to more normal levels in fiscal year 24 of around $300 million was the expectation for that line. So if you turn to page 20, you can see how our revenues are doing so far through February. So this graph shows how we compare from one month compared to the same month the prior year. So in July, we were down $188 million in total revenues as compared to the July of last year. We also had declines in August, November, and January. And we had some positive months in September, October, December, and our recent month in February. So the gray would show that on a cumulative basis that at the end of February, we were up $418 million so far as compared to last year. And you can see a further breakdown of those numbers on page 21 in the table there. As you know, the largest revenue source for the state of Illinois is income tax revenues, and they perform about what we expected so far this fiscal year, up $925 million on a gross basis. Now, that's growth of 5.5%. Now, part of the reason we have that elevated growth of 5.5% is that the Department of Revenue has announced that there's going to be some reallocation of some business-related tax revenues as related to corporations that takes place every year, but that true-up allocation that they're doing this year is a little higher than normal. And so that's kind of elevated the personal income tax line, but has also caused the corporate income tax line to be a little lower than what would normally be. So right now, corporate income tax revenues are down $225 million on a gross basis. That's down 6%. Sales tax revenues started off the fiscal year okay. They slowed in recent months, but currently we're up 1.5%. We've had some slowdowns in public utilities, cigarette tax, as you can see in this table. Some of the growth that we have seen is one from the inheritance tax, or maybe better classified as the estate tax. We're up $71 million through February. A lot of that was probably likely due to the portfolios of those who have passed away. Market conditions have been very good over the last year. That's elevated those totals likely. Interest on state funds and investments are up $112 million through February. That's a growth of $229 million. Of course, that is because of the higher interest rates that the Federal Reserve has issued over the last year. It's caused our investment income to be higher than we were in fiscal year 23. We've also seen some gains from lottery. You can see a pretty good reduction there, again, in the income tax refund fund, but that, again, was expected. We expected things to drop to around $300 million. It actually came in, and this is the final number for fiscal year 24. That refund transfer was $555 million. So that's $255 million more than we originally expected. So that's good news. So then we break down to the very bottom there. You have some one-time revenues that we'll be discussing in a moment. $248 million from excess Public Act 102-700 funds. And $633 million in federal source revenues, and I'll talk about that here shortly. You turn to page 22. This is just a categorical look at the numbers that I just gave you. Again, coming to the bottom line total of $418 million growth as compared to where we were in February of last year. So we're seeing some upward pressure, as I mentioned. The interest income is going to allow us to be able to have an enhanced look at revenues for fiscal year 24 for interest income, for the inheritance tax, and as I mentioned, the income tax refund fund has growth of $255 million. Now, this one-time revenues we've received from federal sources, HFS and the Department of Human Services identified this year a programming year that allowed us to get more Medicaid match claims than we had previously. We were able to retroactively get these matching funds from the federal government, and that gave us an extra $633 million this fiscal year. We received that money in October. Now, that was revenues that we were not expecting, so we are separating that from the regular federal funds total and placing that below the line. So this is good news for fiscal year 24. On page 24, we discuss this transfer of excess funds to the General Revenue Fund. If you recall, at the end of the 102nd General Assembly, we made several tax spending-related changes. Among them was a 1% sales tax on grocery, or suspending the 1% sales tax on groceries. To fund that, to help local governments fund that suspension of that tax, the $400 million was transferred from the General Revenue Fund to the Grocery Tax Replacement Fund. Any monies that are left over in that fund after that, those monies has been given back to the local governments was to be transferred back into the state. And that occurred in December at a value of $148 million. If you also recall, there was some rebates that were issued, some one-time rebates. $685 million was transferred to the income tax refund for our income tax rebates, and $520 million was transferred for property tax rebates. After those rebates were issued, there was $100 million that were remaining in those funds, so that money was transferred back to the General Revenue Fund. So these two items combined equates to $248 million in what we're considering as one-time revenues that were not expected for fiscal year 24. The other thing I want to highlight is the performance of personal income tax revenues so far this fiscal year. As I said earlier, on a net basis, we're at 5.3% net. We are expecting that number to rise. The enacted budget assumes that that number will grow to about a growth around 8%. And that's because we have some more true-up deposits that are going to be coming in over the remainder of the fiscal year. That's going to equate to around $650 million. We're also, my gut is telling me that we could have a pretty good final tax period period coming up. As you know, market conditions were really strong in 2023. The expectations that we probably have some good income from dividends and capital gains as people file their taxes. In addition, the higher interest rates that people have been enjoying for their savings accounts, for their CDs, is probably going to elevate the amount of income tax revenues that we gain from those sources. So there is potential that we may raise our personal income tax forecast in the future, but we didn't at this time. And the reason is just from the historic volatility of final tax payments this time of the year. It's just really difficult to estimate, and it's better to wait, see how they perform over the next 2 months, and then if we need to make an adjustment, we'll come back in May and make an adjustment at that time. Adding to that uncertainty, there's been expansion of some tax incentives, including the expansion of the earned income tax credit and the classroom expense tax credit will be taking place. We want to wait and see how much that will be a cost to the state revenues. And we've also seen a weakening of employment and wage growth in recent months. This is another reason for us to take a cautious approach to tax revenue expectations in the near future. And we'll talk about that more here in a second. So here is our revenue forecast as we look at page 26. Our bottom line number is a fiscal year 24 revision of $52.590 billion. Now that is nearly $2 billion higher than the enacted revenue assumptions. A lot of that comes from the one-time revenues that I mentioned before, the $248 million from the excess Public Act 102-700 funds and $633 million in the prior year federal matching funds. As I noted before, we are not making an adjustment to our personal income tax line at this time, but we are increasing our corporate income tax and our sales tax lines slightly because of the year-to-date performance. All other state sources, we're seeing the big jump there, and that's mainly because of the investment income that we've seen so far, as well as the inheritance tax revenues that have come in. Transfers in, this is again related to the income tax refund transfer that we talked about earlier. That's why you're seeing a jump there. We are seeing a slowdown in federal sources. Typically, we adopt the governor's office on their federal source number as it relates to how they spend the money. So in total, this is good news for fiscal year 24. We're increasing our revenue estimate by nearly $2 billion. You can see a further breakdown of that figure below on page 27. If you go to page 28, you can see how our new number, our revised estimate, compares to that of GOMB. They showed what their revised estimate is in the budget book that they released in February. Their figure is of $52.2 billion. Ours comes in at $52.6 billion. So that's a $374 million increase as compared to them. But that's only about a 0.7% difference. You can see we're a little more aggressive in corporate income tax, mainly because we have the luxury of having January and February actuals into our estimate. Their numbers usually come out using actuals through December. For that same reason, we've seen a little slowdown in sales tax revenues, and so while we did increase our revenue estimate for sales tax, we are slightly below them, but not much difference of only $44 million. And then you can see that we're a little bit higher than them in all other state sources and transfers in. And then the $100 million we got from the transfer of rebates, they weren't able to incorporate that into their estimate at that time. So again, a growth, we're a little bit higher than them, but $374 million. On page 29 below, you just see a further breakdown of those figures. So looking into fiscal year 25, what are we seeing? There is some concerns going forward that the economy, or not necessarily economy, that revenues are slowing down. One of the main things we look at is sales tax revenues. How are they performing? You see on page 30 that there is still growth. That growth has definitely slowed over the last 2 years. Coming out of the pandemic, we had double-digit growth. But as federal stimulus money has waned, the growth that we have seen has definitely slowed down to where we are now seeing growth less than 2%. And actually, over the last 4 months, we've had growth of only 0.5%. So this is a little bit concerning. Now, some of that growth is, or that slowdown is because we've had below average big item purchases. That's, of course, because we have higher interest rates with the whole intention of slowing the economy, and we've seen that in lower purchases in homes and cars in recent months. Obviously, we have a lower consumer confidence right now because of inflation. We've also seen a continuing trend of a shift from buying taxable goods, which there was large purchases of taxable goods coming out of the pandemic. And that has slowed, and it's more of a trend towards non-taxable service sectors. So we look on page 31, we're also seeing slowdown in the growth that we've seen from employment, as Ben alluded to earlier. Again, it's still in the positive. We're still seeing positive growth, but that has slowed from growth between 3, 4, 5%. Now we're seeing growth of less than 1% on a month compared to the same month a year prior. On page 32, you see we're also seeing a slowdown in wages. Wages were high. Now, the good part of being high wages, and while that negatively affected inflation, high wages meant high income tax revenues that came in. So as we start to see a slowdown in wages, we should see a little bit of a slowdown in personal income tax revenues as well. Looking on page 33, you can see our revised estimate with these items in mind. Our bottom line number for fiscal year 25 is a little over $52 billion. Now that figure is $513 million lower than the revised fiscal year 24 forecast. One of the primary reasons for that, this drop, is because the one-time revenues that we discussed earlier in fiscal year 24 that will not repeat, those one-time revenues again equal $881 million. So if you take out those one-time revenues, we are seeing growth in fiscal year 25 on a base level, but that growth is only about 0.7%. Our personal income tax line, we are increasing 3.3%, but that is below the average that we've seen over the last several years. Adjusted gross income over the last 10, 11 years has averaged 4.7%. So the growth that we're showing here of 3.3 is significantly lower than what we have seen in recent years. One item you see here is that we're dropping our corporate income tax revenue number by $545 million. And the primary reason for that is that there is a net operating loss deduction, or often referred to as the NOL deduction, that has had a cap on it for the last three tax years. Well, that cap is going away effective for tax year 2024, which will impact final tax payments in fiscal year 25. So without that cap in place, there should be a revenue reduction for the state of Illinois as more people will be able to obtain this deduction. Now, this NOL deduction without the limit historically has cost the state around $600 million, $500 to $600 million. With that limit, the deduction only costs the state roughly around $40 million historically. And so that's a savings that we've been able to enjoy, I guess, from a state revenue perspective of around $560 million per year. So the one thing I want to point out in this when we discuss about fiscal year 25 revenues, our revenue projections are what we consider current law estimates. They are not assuming any changes to state law. Now, the governor's office just issued their fiscal year 25 estimates here last month. Their numbers do include some revenue changes, including is they had adjusted their NOL deduction to continue on instead of going away. And so that's one of the reasons that you'll see a difference between us and GOMB in the corporate income tax line here. Sales tax revenues, we are up $25 million, 25 compared to 24. Now, that's a little misleading. If you look on the next page, on page 34, our gross sales tax revenue projection is a growth of $235 million. That's 2% growth. We expect sales tax revenues to actually pick up a little bit if interest rates are to fall as expected. That should help spur the economy a little bit from the standpoint of buying houses, buying cars. And so we're seeing some growth there. But the reason we have net growth of $25 million is that there's money being redistributed to the road fund. In fiscal year 24, $596 million was distributed to the road fund. That amount is expected to increase to $793 million in fiscal year 25. We're also seeing some declines in all other state sources. This is mainly, again, related to investment income. Investment income should fall if interest rates were to fall. And then we are, again, adopting the federal source number of the GOMB, and they expect an increase in federal sources of $294 million. So the bottom line, again, is that our number is $513 million below our fiscal year 24 revision.
Pause you for a second. Mm-hmm. Can you add Senator Sims to the roll? Thank you.
So looking on page 35, you can see how our revenue projections for fiscal year 25 compare to that of the governor's office. Again, the governor's office includes some proposed revenues changes to their number. So what we have here is not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison, because we, again, are looking at revenues from a current law perspective where they include what we have accounted as $1.1 billion in revenue adjustments. Because of that, our figures are $916 million lower than the numbers that they included in their budget book. So on page 36 is a breakdown of those revenue adjustments that they are assuming in their figures. This includes an $81 million net increase in the personal income tax. Well, $93 million of that is caused by adjusting the standard deduction. Under current law, that is supposed to go to $2,775 per exemption. They are proposing to, instead of letting that go according to the cost of living adjustment, to keep that at $2,550. By doing so, this would save the state $93 million. They also propose a refundable child tax credit, which would cost $12 million. So the net difference here is $81 million. There's a $520 million increase in their corporate income tax line because they are assuming the net operating loss deduction limitation would continue at a slightly different limit. Instead of a $100,000 cap on it, they're increasing that to $500,000. But this change would increase corporate income tax revenues by $526 million for fiscal year 25. Sales tax revenues, they are proposing a little bit of a different distribution change, where they're going to keep money into the general funds instead of sending it to the public transportation fund. This would save the state $175 million. They are also proposing a $1,000 per month cap on the retailer's discount. This would bring in $101 million. There is a proposal to increase the exemption level for the corporate franchise tax. This would actually be a cost to the state of $10 million. They propose a real estate transfer tax distribution change for fiscal year 25 only that would save the state $25 million. And they are also proposing a sports wagering tax, increasing it from 15% to 35%, and having all of the proceeds from that additional tax go to the state's general funds. So that's an increase of $200 million. So again, in total, that's nearly $1.1 billion that they are including in their figures. So their bottom line, and you can see the differences between our figures and theirs on the more detailed look on page 37, again showing that our figures are $916 million lower than them. But if we were to try to adjust their figures, as we show on page 38, and try to make it more of an apples-to-apples comparison, that's what we're trying to show here. Again, our number is a little over $52 billion. They started at $53 billion, but if we take away their $1.1 billion in adjustments, their number is $51.9 billion, which is actually $182 million lower than us. So we're about 0.3% higher than them if we are at an apples-to-apples comparison. We are a little bit lower than them in personal and corporate income tax, as well as the sales tax. But we are higher in our look at all other state sources. That's mainly because of our investment income. We expect the interest rates to stay up a little bit higher. They have them going down a little quicker than we do. And then our transfers in total, we're higher than them there. We expect the income tax refund transfer to be higher than they do there. And that's really the primary reasons for us to be different in those two lines. On page 39 is just simply a more further breakdown of the numbers you see above. So in summary, things are looking good for fiscal year 24. Fiscal year 25 will be a little bit of a challenge, as I mentioned before. Bottom line is that we are well below the governor's office by $916 million in our 25 outlook, but when you take out those one-time revenues, we are actually $102 million higher, so pretty much the same estimate. We have now the appendix, and we have several charts and tables that we've included in our revenue presentations over the last several years. They are there for your enjoyment if you want to read them. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? You want to, Senator Seward, Senator Kaler?
And looking at Eric and some of the projections of employment and wages and inflation and all that, I guess what I was struck by is that it really shows that what the Fed was doing worked, and they wanted to cool the economy, so they did. And so how does that change in terms of, they're projecting now that maybe there's a 25 basis point lowering of the interest rates in June. What does that, I know it lowers our investment income a bit, but what does that do for the overall projections of what we've seen here?
Right now, when we were looking at it, we were expecting some interest rate reductions a little sooner. The market's predicting a little later, and one of the things I've been seeing is with the high inflation we actually had the last 2 months, and our job numbers have been really high. So I think the Fed has some concerns still. So I think they're going to keep rates, as they said, at higher for longer. So I think the market might have got a little ahead of itself. In December, they were predicting 3 rate decreases in the year. Now they're thinking maybe we might still see decreases, but maybe we only get 1 or 2 in the year. So we're actually seeing, I think we're going to see some higher rates for a little bit longer than we were initially expecting a couple months ago. And as related to the revenue, I think we're just seeing a slowdown just in general, especially with like sales tax. A lot of our growth last couple years, that sales tax had inflation in it. Well, if inflation's going away, that's also going to, decrease our sales numbers.
Senator Severson. Thank you. Over on page 16, we're talking about real disposable personal income and personal consumption. Help me understand that. What's your definition of real disposable personal income?
So real disposable personal income is personal income after taxes. So it's what's after you pay your taxes, what you have remaining. This is actually averages for the years you're seeing here.
Okay, so it's after taxes, but not, it's one of the concerns we look at, and maybe that's why we have some of the slowing down on some of the spending. If we have personal debt at an all-time high, if we have credit card debt at an all-time high, we have a car loan defaults right now at an all-time, we're slowing of being able to make those car payments at an all-time high. And I read my reports right, we have the largest amount of people withdrawing out of savings and 401ks than before. So people sound like they're trying to maintain a standard of living that's beyond what their incomes are. So is that impacting? That doesn't show up. It sounds like that doesn't show up in that disposable income. But is there a concern, or do we measure the fact that we're facing such?
Well, we've seen some. So we had a period of there where inflation was growing faster than wages. Over the last year or so, wages have caught up and you are seeing some real increases. We're seeing a return to trend. Depending on where you start that trend, we're sort of either say, if you look at between 2010 to 2019, we're a little bit above where we are. Now, if you just consider the last like 4 or 5 years, we're a little bit below. So we're near trend on real income, but definitely you have seen an increase in debt, though I might refer this more of a return to trend. The economy is bigger, so we can handle a little more debt, but we always keep an eye on it. You have seen a little increase in some distress in loans, but I still would consider it normal, not crazy high. But it is, the economy in and of itself is growing, so you're seeing expansion in and of debt itself. But if you look at that compared to the GDP or income, it's still within pretty normal ranges.
In the job growth numbers, too, we had looked at, I guess, two other things that jump out of our concern is, I think one of the largest growth of jobs were in government, which is concerning because that just means, again, more government spending is an issue. And the other issue is, do we measure productivity? And we have read that productivity is dropping at a bigger number than we've had before. And
I disagree. I mean, we've seen pretty good productivity numbers the last couple quarters with people getting new jobs over the last couple of years and rearranging of the labor market. They've been having pretty good labor productivity numbers.
I guess how you define productivity, it's about overall job growth or productivity per...
Oh, okay. I mean, we definitely have seen a slowdown, and we have seen slowdown in the hours and stuff, but the productivity of individual employees, as far as I know, have been increasing the last couple quarters quite significantly, okay. Or good numbers.
Okay. Then the last question, beyond the net on the carryover that we talked about being extended with that, what's that fallout going to be in the impact on corporations? Was that on?
Yes, on page 36. There's a line-by-line look at what the governor's office estimates the cost will be by having this limit extended, and then not only extended, but at a different threshold. There was a $100,000 limit, and they want to increase that to $500,000 limit. But even doing so, this would bring in $526 million. So it would hurt corporate income tax revenues if you want to look at it from that perspective. But from a state perspective, it would bring in $526 million by having this cap return for fiscal year 25.
Okay. And then I guess I did one more last question. With the inflation rate or the numbers given coming out today being higher, and with that excluding fuel and food, which are obviously two big drivers, the easing of the market doesn't sound like that's going to happen anytime near in the near future.
Well, I mean, there are definitely issues. I mean, the Fed wants a slowdown in the economy, a continued slowdown. And the last couple of months, we've seen good employment numbers, well, high employment numbers, which, depending on where you want the market to go, good or bad. Definitely, as the Fed chair said, it's sort of a rocky path. You're going to have some bad months, and definitely the last 2 months are not good. So I would say they're going to keep rates a little higher, a little longer, just because there is a chance that the market or the economy does start going again, you know, and if you do see that, you're going to have inflation issues. So that's definitely a concern, but I think over the last 4 to 5 months, you've seen a rebalancing of the Fed's concern, whereas before it was all about inflation. We had a couple of weak months in employment, and then that sort of became a little more in balance, saying, okay, we got to keep full employment and then worry about inflation. So it's a balancing act, and definitely the last 2 months have put some probably a little more weight back on the inflation, because they definitely don't want it flaring back up.
And well, it's not your, well, it's not obviously your fault. At some point, the Feds need to maybe change the way they do their jobs report. It's just incredible how they're such a hurry to get those reports out.
Yes.
And then 2 months later, they're always either dramatically low or dramatically high, and to be that far off is incredible that they continue to produce reports that are that unreliable for people to do their planning. So it's, but again, that's not you, but makes your job more difficult in trying to measure those outcomes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Leader Hernandez.
Quick question here. In the unemployment rate, U.S. versus Illinois, is there any sort of indicators of what sector is the largest lack of job growth?
So, as I mentioned before, we had a, So in 2023, we had a lot of growth in government, education, and healthcare, and they've actually, that was actually sort of lagging in the expansion, so you've seen some makeup there, because my theory would be you probably had a lot more wage increases outside of government previously, whereas now you're starting to see some more, and you saw those in the government spending numbers. They're starting to hire people back, offering a little bit better pay. So that's sort of what you're seeing there. In Illinois, we've seen a, the professional and business services sector really took a ding last year and just sort of got knocked down a little. So that's the one we were seeing some issues with, but we also had other sectors that weren't doing quite as well. But
thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. I have a couple questions. The state has seen a credit rating increase over the past several years with the bond markets upgrading our credit rating. Do you have a sense of how that's affected our revenues and what we spend on interest on our debt, how that's affected the budget?
I mean, it's going to be more on your debt side, what you're paying, versus the revenue side.
Yeah, I don't know. We've got our bond expert back here.
Our bond expert back here. She could probably tell you a little bit.
Hi, I'm Lene Kapp. That would be more on the, when we're selling bonds, we'll get lower interest rates and then have to pay lower debt service. So if we sell new bonds or do refunding bonds on previous, then we would save money on the debt service.
Sure. So do we have a sense of how much we've saved on our debt service because of the credit rating increase?
Ratings just happened more recently. In November was maybe the final rating where we got into the single A category from the triple B category, and we've only had a few sales since then. Plus, it also depends on the market at the time. Mm-hmm. because interest rates there fluctuate too. We could try to put something together for you if you'd like.
That would be great. I think that would be useful. The second question I have is, you provide information on 30-year mortgage rates and 10-year treasury, and we know that mortgage interest rates are higher than they've been historically over the past several decades. But as, in terms of housing cost overall, how does that factor into the CPI that's presented? Do we have a sense of...
So right now, one of the things that is driving CPI is the cost of shelter, both rents and the what they consider OER, owner's equivalent rate, I believe it stands for. And unfortunately, one of the issues with CPI is shelter takes longer to get into. It's a lagging indicator. So one of the reasons that CPI is staying higher is because all of the increases in rent and housing over the last couple of years, it's one reason why it took longer for going into it. So we actually stayed lower a little longer because housing costs takes a full year because you're replacing new rents a year at a time, but you're not doing everything at once. So that's one issue. If you look at measures of CPI without housing, a lot of it's a lot lower, and that's why some economists have said basically this housing, and a lot of countries outside the U.S. don't actually include this kind of measure, and it's much lower, and it's like well near where 2%, so that's why many economists believe we've sort of already achieved a soft landing. So,
okay. So if we were to, is there a way to disaggregate that information to see what the, if we were to take out how, what the impact of housing and rent is on
sure.
CPI?
Sure, yeah. I can give you some numbers related to different measures based on what you include, what you don't include, and how high or what, how much they're affecting, like weighting and stuff. I can get you stuff like that.
Okay, thank you. I think that that helps as we consider policies that would affect the cost of housing and what we're doing as a state to help people with the cost of rent and whatnot. Because I think it is interesting to see that in the areas of food and energy that the cost of those commodities are actually coming down. Oftentimes those are blamed for people feeling pinched, but I think ultimately housing and shelter, as you said, are more of the main culprits, and I think it's informative for us as a body to understand those, how those factors relate. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative McLaughlin.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation today. Quick question. Net operating loss removal for businesses in the governor's forecast, which you don't have. And again, this isn't really your guy's job, but that rollback, how does that compare to what other states in our regions are doing for net operating loss?
I don't know that offhand. I would have to look into that and get back to you with that.
Because my assumption would be here that if the net operating loss of over half of $1 billion, it looks like in your estimate, would have a negative impact on business who employs people in the state. Would that be an accurate description?
It would have a negative impact on who?
On the businesses who employ people in the state.
That would be, if the estimate is $500 and some million cost to them, that would obviously hurt those businesses by that same figure. So, that takes away available funds for them. So, from that perspective, yes, that would hurt corporations.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we understand that the rollback is going to be a negative for businesses to stay and new businesses to come if we continue a regulatory environment that overtaxes business. I was looking at the Moody's report regionally. It appears that our business tax is at 45th percentile relative to all of the other states, and we're significantly higher. So I just want this committee and our friends in the chamber to be aware of the business environment, how important that is to keep businesses, retain them, and continue to grow it in Illinois. It's our best way to recover. So thank you. I appreciate your comments.
I just have a couple of quick questions, and I appreciate you all going through this with me yesterday afternoon. When we look at, I feel like probably for the last at least 4 or 5 years, we've had this surprise at the end of the year where there's been extra revenue.
And, you know, I think we're looking at, you know, extra revenue coming from the inflation and the higher interest rates. And then the federal sources that we're seeing the majority of the the largest part of the increase is one-time revenues from the federal government that we looked back to claim. So technically it's revenue from past years that we're claiming this year, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then as we look at job growth, Senator Severson mentioned that it's mostly in the government sectors over the last couple months, and the job losses that we've seen have been the what I would consider head of household jobs, IT and things of that sort. The wage increases that we've seen have been on the lower end, right, on the lower earners were the highest increase, correct?
Yes. When coming out of the pandemic, you definitely saw the lower quartiles, less than 50%, wage earners were getting higher wages. Now, we saw the higher earners start getting also, but yes, yeah. Leading into the out of the pandemic, the lower earners.
So we saw as the state increased minimum wage, and as business were trying to pull people out of the pandemic back into employment, we saw those wages going up. We saw McDonald's paying $19 an hour. I mean, it was crazy to try to get people to return to the to employment. And then we saw the lag in the next quarter of the employment. So we're seeing as those wages are pushed up, the next quarter of employees are starting to go up just a little bit less of a percentage, and then the next level goes up a little bit less of a percentage, but it's shoving wages up, but that is slowing, correct?
Yes. It seems to have peaked basically at the end of 22, and throughout most of 23, we're seeing a slowdown. Now we're still growing, it's just not as fast as we were before.
Okay. And I hope that our citizens plan accordingly, not expecting those to continue the way they have in the past few years. And back to that surprise bucket of money, you said that you have a gut feeling that our revenues will come in probably a little bit better. It's kind of a little bit, maybe a small April surprise as people pay their taxes because of possible interest rates and things of that sort.
Yes. That's our hope from a state revenue perspective that would occur. I know just personally doing my own taxes and talking to my father-in-law and my dad that all three of us have had to pay more taxes than we expected. But the good news is that's because of the higher interest income that we've gained from our savings account and our CDs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if that is the same case throughout the state, which it probably will be, I think revenues will turn out to be pretty good from final tax payments in this fiscal year. Now, I just want to say we're up about 5-6% right now. To reach our enacted revenue estimate for personal income tax, it has to grow to around 8%. So we do expect some growth just in the enacted budget. And that's probably more why we're not wanting to make any adjustment at this time. Let's wait and see how the revenues come in, and then in May we'll make an adjustment if that does come in better than expected.
You're just saying don't be surprised if there's a little
bit. Don't be surprised.
Which is a good thing. But as we go into the next budget year, I keep trying to predict what that next bucket of money we're going to fall into, because like I said, over the last 4 or 5 years, it just seems like at the end of the year, we've just been that lucky. So, it's nice to be lucky, but you can't plan on it. Just looking at the last decade of income tax revenue in the appendix, you know, we're looking at our income tax revenue has grown by almost double in the last decade.
That that is the case, and I was looking at some figures. I've been with the commission a long time. Since fiscal year 1999, I think it might have been at that time, net income tax revenues from personal and corporate brought in about $8 billion. Now we're looking at around $31 billion. And so not only is that amount grown, but income tax was brought in about 50% of the total revenues at the beginning of the turn of the century, and now we're talking about 60%. And so we're having more reliance on the income tax in our state revenue picture.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Sims.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on the employee wage growth, would it be safe to say that the lowest wage earners were the first one to be unemployed during the pandemic?
Yes, definitely there was a shift, and you can see that in some of the income numbers. Definitely lower wages were more likely to be laid off than higher wage earners.
So as you talk about the economy bouncing back, since those were the first ones to be fired, would it stand to reason that those would be the first one to be rehired?
Definitely, especially in the hospitality, we saw in leisure sector, which are some of the lower wages, we saw a really decline there, and you saw a lot of hiring back in that sector.
Okay. Now, also, corporate profits have not dipped over the last several years, have they?
It's so the last up and down. Quarters. They definitely had a really good year last year. I won't lie to you off the...
It's on your YouTube.
Yeah, just give me 1 second here. Yeah, so in 2021, you saw 22.6% growth in nominal pre-tax corporate profits. This slowed to 9.8% in 22, and it's basically flat. It's estimated to be flat. It's not an actual yet in 23. So you definitely saw big jumps in profits the last few years. That has been slowing.
But so, again, that means low-wage earners are not the ones driving the increase in the increases. That's a benefit of the, you're seeing corporate profits being high. But let me move to something else. Where are we in terms of over the last several years, so 22, 23, 24, well, 22, 23, from your beginning estimates to final estimates and final receipts, how close were you from revenue estimates at the beginning of the year or at the end of the year to final receipts?
Our revenue expectations have been very conservative when we do these forecasts. And I think rightfully so is because you've seen so many predictions of a recession. I think the vast majority of those would say that we were going to be entering a recession. So if we would have come out with forecasts that equated to the actuals that came in, we would have been laughed at, quite honestly. And revenues have definitely come in a lot better than expected. So, yes, our revenues have been short of or they have come in a lot better than our original expectations.
So the last couple of years, it's not been a measure of just luck. It's been a measure of being conservative in our estimates and then hitting our targets.
I think it's, yes, definitely a combination of us being, you know, in these times of uncertainty, if things go bad, it could go really bad. And I think it's our responsibility to not provide a number that is too optimistic or too pessimistic. And so, it's good news for the state of Illinois that revenues come in better than expected.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. And again, thanks for the presentation.
Any further questions? With that, I think we're ready to adjourn. I want to remind everybody, I know we've had some sneak out, but we're going to have our next meeting on April 9th. We'll plan on 9 o'clock. Unfortunately, the House is not in session that day, but that's the date that ended up working out. So I hope to see everyone here. Thank you. I move we adjourn.